Hello and welcome to this episode of the No Bullshit Anxiety Talk Show. Today I'm going to be sharing with you my interview with Dr. Mally Coyne from the Anxiety Support Summit. During this chat, we're going to be discussing her now best-selling book, Love In, Love Out, A Compassionate Approach to Parenting Your Anxious Child. Now, I don't want to do a double intro, but I will say this. If you are a parent with an anxious child or you're an anxious parent, you do not want to miss this. As always, thanks for listening. If you are getting value, please do head on over to iTunes or wherever you listen and leave a 5-star review to help others that can benefit find it. And of course, if you know someone who needs to hear this or would benefit from reading Dr. Coyne's book, please do share it with them. All information and links are provided in the show notes or on my website, nickycullen.com, where you can also sign up for my weekly No Bullshit Underground newsletter. Thanks again for listening and enjoy. Guys, right now I have the pleasure of being joined by one of Ireland's leading clinical psychologists, Dr. Mally Coyne, who with 20 years experience specializes in working with children, teenagers and their families. Dr. Mally is very passionate about promoting well-being and increasing awareness of mental health issues, particularly child and infant mental health, which she achieves through her advocacy work, public speaking, print, radio, and TV contributions. And today, I believe, is the launch of a brand new book, Love In and Love Out, A Compassionate Approach to Parenting Your Anxious Child. Personally, I have always been of the belief that a parent can support their child more than they know while helping to ease the burden of anxiety significantly. Of course, as with everything, there is a flip side. And while the parent only wants the best for the child, the reality, parenting doesn't come with an instruction manual. Now, I'm not a parent. I can only imagine how challenging and stressful a job it can be. This is an extremely tough topic to tackle, and one that is vitally important. So I tip my hat to you, Doc, because this book, I have no doubt, will be an absolute game changer for both parents and the future of their children everywhere. And I cannot wait to discuss it with you. So thank you so much for being here and welcome to the Anxiety Support Summit.
Thank you so much, Nikki. It's brilliant to be here. So, so happy. Thank you.
And congrats on this book. It is such a fantastic undertaking. And like, you know, I hope it sells 10 million copies and 10 million more. I think it could help that many. Maybe we could just kick off with a little bit of background to your work and why the parent-child relation is something you're so passionate about.
Nikki, I've been working as a psychologist for 20 years. I've always been interested in psychology, probably because of my background. I lived in lots of different countries. My role in my family was always one of being kind of a caretaker, of looking after people, making sure everyone was okay, because it was literally the five of us moving from country to country to country. And that kind of sparked my interest in psychology. And then when I started doing psychology in college in 94, for some reason, child development and child psychology just really it was fascinating to me, you know, just how babies come into the world, how they change every year. And then I always felt this kind of visceral response almost when they started talking about attachment theory, which is Bowlby's attachment theory. He was a pediatrician and a psychoanalyst. And basically what he said was that the child-parent relationship is a really, like, it's hugely important in terms of the child developing in all aspects of their lives, that that quality, that relationship is really important. And he talked about secure versus insecure attachment. And it just kind of spurred my interest for what is it about that relationship that's really important. And I was an anxious child, as I think you were as well. And yeah, so I always, for me, writing this book was almost like a healing, a self-healing exercise for me, because I knew I wanted to write a book about parenting, and I knew it would have attachment theory in it and the relationship being all important. And I know anxiety is a huge problem because I work as a psychologist and I can see that every day that there's more referrals coming in for anxiety. But as a child, I know what it felt like, and it felt like a really lonely place to be. And what I really wanted to do was to help parents to understand what that actually feels like. So it was kind of like a healing thing for me to write it, because I was writing it as an anxious child. I write it as a parent. And I also write it as a psychologist. So you've got bits of, I've actually got myself in there as a case study. You've got bits of, you know, professional and kind of personal stuff in there as well.
Well, it sounds like the perfect mix, from having that understanding and obviously being a parent yourself and being a psychologist, huge, just brings so much to it. So, you know, if you go back to your, to your, what age group do we reference here when you speak to the child?
In my book, literally it covers all age groups. You know, I cover from age 0 to age 18, basically, because, you know, anybody can become anxious. I mean, children of a younger age might have different fears than children who are maybe 15, you know, like a child who's much younger might be afraid of being separated from their parents. They have a vivid imagination. They might be afraid of monsters. They truly believe in them, or they might be afraid of the dark, or, and then children around the age of 9, which is when I became anxious, kind of become really aware of not only their families, but their peer groups. And they're very aware of what's going on in the world. And maybe the pressures are starting to build up. And around age 8 or 9 is a very rife time for anxiety. And that's when my anxiety really hit. And then I've got teenagers that come to see me with anxiety. And very often teenagers' anxiety is kind of based around social anxiety, around socializing with peers. They might be anxious about exams or about, you know, how they're going to do later in life. Anxiety, I suppose, can be rife for any age. And so what I try to do is I kind of talk about the parent's response to the child's anxiety, no matter what age the child is. I don't kind of break it up too much, although I do have some sections that are more suitable for, like, cognitive behavioral therapy would be more suitable for a teenager, and play therapy or play techniques that parents can use are more suitable for a younger child. And then mindfulness is useful for a child no matter what their age. So in terms of the kind of therapeutic aspects of the book, or, you know, the empowerment aspects, as I call, they kind of cover all the ages. There's something in there for all parents.
Okay, amazing. And so if you're seeing children as young as 9 years old, I assume they're, you know, they're obviously not coming to you knocking on the door themselves. It's their parents that are bringing them to you. What are some of the biggest concerns that, and fears that parents have, like, that they don't know how to handle?
Well, I see kids for anxiety and fears. I've seen like 4, 5, 6 year olds as young as that. Where, say, and obviously 9 year olds is a rife time as well, as you said, but the parents are most concerned about, how do I help my child in this situation? I always ask the parents, inevitably, I always ask them, does your child remind you of somebody that you know? Is anybody else anxious in the family? Because anxiety, like they say, 15% of it, 15% of us have an anxious temperament. You can actually see it in babies from the time that they're born, in how they react to different stimuli, that some babies are more anxious. They react with more kind of fear than other babies who welcome this kind of stimulation. So very often you can have a child who has an anxious parent, or somebody, a parent who's a little bit anxious, or a grandparent who's a little bit anxious. And so I had to kind of write a book that addressed how they react to each other. So if the child is like, mommy, mommy, don't go away, you can't leave the house, I'm afraid you're going to die, or whatever else, and they're really anxious, well then, even if the parent wasn't anxious to begin with, they will be, very often they become quite anxious as a result of that as well, that interaction. Mm. And so I knew that I can't just write a book that talks about this is what you do for your child, or this is what a psychologist, how they'll help your child. I had to write a book that addressed how the parent feels in that situation when their child is anxious, what it does to them inside, what kind of wounds it brings up for them from their past, how were their emotions met when they were children, and all of those things hugely influence how they will respond to their child.
Wow. So a lot of it is, a lot of it is them doing work on themselves and going back to their past and just understanding their behaviors and their patterns and how they rub off on their child.
Yeah, I mean, there's a brilliant concept. Like, I suppose in my book, I tried to combine like all the theories and all the most amazing kind of learnings that I've had. And there's a lot of clients in there as well, anonymously, obviously. But I went to this course a few years ago called Circle of Security, which is basically a way of mapping attachment in a kind of a map. So the child either goes out to explore their environment, or they come back in to seek comfort, which is all about part of the attachment process between the child and the parent. And the parent is there as the supporter of this exploration and is there when the child needs comfort. So the parent is there when the child goes up a climbing frame and they support their exploration. But if the child falls and needs soothing, the parent is also there to help them. So there was this amazing concept I learned about called shark music, which is basically they show a video to parents who are in this parenting course, and it shows them going down. It shows like a video of somebody going down a path. And it's a lovely path. There's beautiful music playing in the background, and then they turn a corner and they go, and it's a beach and it's gorgeous. It's like a scene in Bali, say, you know, gorgeous place with lovely music. And then they ask parents, how do you feel watching that video? And the parents are like, oh, that's so beautiful. You know, there's such possibility there. I just really, really, you know, I feel so hopeful. Yeah. And then they show the exact same video with Jaws music playing in the background. So you've got, you know, that kind of music. And then they ask parents, how do you feel turning the corner? And parents are like, oh my God, I feel so kind of afraid. I don't know, there could be somebody lurking behind the trees, all of that. So basically a parent named that shark music. Basically shark music is like the, when we as parents, if a child is anxious and that makes you really kind of tense up and freeze, very often that's your shark music. That's the way you may have been reacted to when you were younger. So I invite parents in my book to look at what ways were your feelings met when you were younger. We're not trying to blame parents, by the way, or grandparents. It's always to do with being compassionate. Mm-hmm. But it's trying to help parents just to be aware that their reactions, how safe they feel in a moment, is going to really impact on their children. So it's important. The first, I have an acronym in my book that's called SAFE. And the first step in that acronym in terms of how to react to your child is self-care. And self-care is about looking inside yourself at your you know, how your feelings were met, reflecting on yourself as a parent now, and then also nourishing yourself. I have this lovely thing called a lotus of self-care, which is basically five aspects of self-care, like physical, social, spiritual, psychological, emotional. And then the parent, I love that idea of the lotus. I'm sure you know of the metaphor that the lotus is used for. It's so beautiful, the top of it. But then there's all this kind of muddy, like a pond, and there's really strong, sinuous kind of fibers like underneath the water. And it just kind of shows that, you know, from pain can come kind of something really beautiful. That's kind of so that's my first step in the book, is about parents reflecting on themselves and looking after themselves.
Okay. Great. And I guess if the parents are doing that, then the child is going to see that and kind of adapt that behavior themselves.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. The parent is calm, a little bit calmer, then the child will automatically, like, kids are constantly looking to their parents for how they react to situations. They're always looking to see, are you in good mood? Are you nervous? Are you in a rush? They're constantly looking out. And the whole idea of the compassionate approach is about like parents taking a step back and seeing what is the need behind my child's behavior. Not just, oh my God, my child is like freaking out. It's, I wonder why they're freaking out. I wonder why they're upset. And just kind of taking it slow and just figuring out why that might be. And rather than getting really het up, which is really hard for parents. I know that, but that's hopefully my book will help.
Yeah, I've no doubt it will. So what are kind of some of the tools that you would suggest parents use to kind of better understand their child's anxiety and what's going on, so they can be there to support them in the right way?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like, so the beginning of my book is about, you know, I talk about like how talking to your child about anxiety won't make them more anxious. Because sometimes I've heard that actually from parents, that they're like, oh, a therapist told me not to talk about anxiety because it'll make them worse. And I kind of just demystify that and say that's not true, you know. And I kind of, I talk about how when you're anxious as a child, basically, your body is telling you there's a threat, and your thoughts are telling you there's a threat, as you know. And there's this interaction between your body and your thoughts. So in other words, you perceive a threat out there. Then you have this thought, oh, my God, this is really dangerous. Oh, my God. Then suddenly it releases these chemicals in your body. And then your body is telling, is, you know, your heart is racing, your stomach is hurting. I had a lot of stomach aches as a child. Mm-hmm. You have all these physical kind of symptoms. You know, you might have a kind of a tense chest and And like, it's like, and if your parent were to say to you in that situation, don't worry, everything is fine. You know, like, you know, there's nothing to be worried about. Whereas the child is feeling in that moment, oh my God, like, I'm going to die. This is awful. My body and my, you know. And so rather than the parent say to the child, there's nothing to worry about, which I know is the most natural thing for the parent to do, but that's not actually really helpful, because the child's body is telling them that there is something wrong. And so it's really important. The next step in the SAFE acronym I have is to anchor your child. So the anchor, I love that as a metaphor, this anchor as a symbol, I love it, because it's all about attachment. It's all about, you know, that the child can move away from the parent, but they'll always be anchored to them, no matter what age they are. You know, you're anchored to your parents, even though you live far away from them. Yeah. You're still anchored. You're still kind of there. So anchoring is all about the parent figuring out how they feel inside and then conveying a sense of safe to their child. So I have lots of little exercises for when your child is deep in an anxiety attack, how to actually bring them down, and how to, they're kind of thinking from the right side of their brain when they're really anxious and when they're really kind of emotional, and how to calm that write down. So rather than saying, it's okay, there's nothing to worry about, it's kind of like talking about, you know, they're called anchoring techniques. Let's just try something now to just calm ourselves down. Or for some other children, it might be, let's do a couple of jumping jacks, or, you know, kind of like run on the spot, so that you're doing something, because actually exercising can really help to get rid of that anxious energy. So I have loads of little tips for how parents can help to anchor their child to safety. And then after that, you've got the feeling felt, which is the F, which is, it comes from a concept by Daniel Siegel in his book, The Whole Brain Child, which is helping the child to understand that, to feel like their feelings matter. So rather than saying, you're not anxious, everything is fine, you're kind of saying, you're feeling really afraid about going to school today. And then you kind of, you know, you really meet them heart to heart. You kind of show them that you care, that you understand. It's like, I think parents sometimes feel like, if I just deny this feeling, it'll go away. But it doesn't. Like, when you're talking to your friend, if you have a friend and you're talking to them, if you were to say to them, oh, I had a really crappy day, and they were to say back to you, oh, no, Nikki, like, it wasn't that bad. Do you want to hear about my crappy day? Or that wasn't too bad. Where that's not validation. That's like denying you of your feeling.
Yeah.
So we don't want to deny our children of their feelings. Yes, their feelings make us uncomfortable, but if you actually let them have the feeling and help them to feel understood or feel felt in that feeling, it'll actually help to bring them out of that feeling, so they're ready for more problem solving. You're trying to bring them from their threat brain into their soothing brain. And I think you do that by this compassionate approach, which is about the parent realizing that they need to also soothe themselves and soothe that inner child that we all have, this hurt inner child. So, and then the last step is empowerment, which is the E, which there I have experts from that I know, like psychotherapists that have contributed really amazing interviews on play, on using playful techniques with kids, on using mindfulness and kindfulness, which is kind of like compassion, and also cognitive behavioral therapy. So I've got so many different people in my book that contributed, because I don't feel like it should be only about me. And then there's loads of client stories as well about how, you know, different case examples that might be helpful to parents as well.
Yeah, it all sounds so good. And I really can't reiterate, because I always think, like, intervention is what we need. We need something. And it's, you know, the governments aren't, this education system is not up to scratch. The governments aren't going to put your child at the forefront of their mind. So ultimately, it kind of has to come down, if you really want to make change and protect your kid from this stuff. And in many ways, you're protecting your kid from something that could really boil over into absolute chaos and mayhem that could plague them for a lifetime. I've spoken to, you know, 50, 60-year-old men who have, like, hold a lot of resentment towards their parents, even though they love them dearly.
I know.
And they're so unbelievably ashamed to bring it up, and because they feel like, you know, obviously their parents have done so much for them that they don't want to hurt them.
I know.
And that is something that your book is going to actually, like, a problem I hope people realize that your book is going to solve in the future.
I hope so. I mean, it makes me sad when you say that about 60-year-old men, really. Like, at the end of the day, like, the way our parents are towards us was the way their parents were towards them, and the grandparents were towards. So this is a generational thing. And so therefore, when you talk about shark music and you talk about how you react to your child, it's an automatic response. It's in your brain. You actually, like, you know, an example sometimes I use is when my kids get hurt small little hurts, like my finger hurts or my this hurts. And I feel this kind of frozen feeling coming over me. I talk about it in the book. It's really a body feeling. It's not a decision. It's a bodily feeling. And I know that's not just me. That came from my parent. And from my parent, it came from her, you know, it has come from our parent and grandparents. So if we're to kind of, you know, unshame and kind of talk about how we're not all, like, you don't have to be a perfect parent. I always talk about good enough parenting. And if you screw up, that's fine. I screw up. I shout at my kids. I have done things I'm not proud of. But it's all about trying to repair when you're tired or when you're full up and you've got a lot on your mind and maybe you don't react the way you would have liked to with your child. It's really important to try to repair that moment with them and say, which is the feeling felt. It's kind of saying to them, I'm really sorry. Mommy was very tired. I I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, because children can be very sensitive to certain things. I mean, only yesterday, like, my daughter got upset because I said, look, you know, if you don't want to be part of it, that's fine, of opening the package of my book or whatever, because she was crying and she felt really kind of wounded in that moment. And there's no point in me saying to her, you know, I was only joking or stop or whatever. I needed to sit with her and say, Mommy's really sorry that I upset you, and it's hard when you're upset. And, you know, I knew she was tired and all these other reasons, but it's about just coming into the moment with your child. And it's about trying and trying again and not trying to get it. You don't have to be perfect. Kids learn resilience from kind of facing a threat, a manageable threat, with you by their side to help them.
Yeah. Beautiful. And as you say, taking a compassionate approach towards it. And towards yourself. I would imagine it's quite a tricky thing in your business to have, because our natural reaction with anxiety, certainly from my point of view, is that to avoid it, to run a mile, and just like not deal with it. And that's with ourselves. So even like, you know, again, I'm not a parent, I don't know. I can't imagine, but like there is a kind of that natural reaction within us. And it's here going like, shit, I don't want to have this conversation with my kid. Mm. You know, shit, it is okay. It's going to be okay, Sally, or whatever. You know, there's nothing really wrong with you. And it's very easy to trick your mind into thinking that you just do it, and you go and you make all your confirmation bias makes up all the excuses in the world to justify it. And I just imagine it's a really tough path to navigate to get the parent to understand that, you know, like, you're doing yourself a disservice by avoiding it, but you're also doing your kid a disservice. And if you can just try not avoiding it for a while, you'd be pretty impressed with the results.
Oh my God. I mean, that just describes an example in my book at the very beginning, where a parent contacted me and said that their teenager was anxious and that a therapist had told the parent, maybe just don't bring up about the kind of mental health or anxiety issues. Like, you know, they could be picking it up from their friends. So, you know, and this therapist was seeing the teenager. And then the parent contacted me and said, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing or not by not saying anything or by not asking my daughter what's going on or whatever. And I just said, like, I think it's really important that you talk about it. You don't have to talk about it for ages, but just to ask them, you know, just to even kind of bring up a specific example. Like, I've noticed the last few times that you've gone to, I don't know, drama practice, you've been a little bit nervous beforehand or whatever you've noticed. So with a teenager, it's about sitting side by side with them, maybe not face to face like we are, and in the car casually kind of just bringing up, oh yeah, I've noticed this, and how are you doing? And I'm just letting you know, I'm here if you need me. And I talk about this lovely technique called unpackaging, where you kind of talk to your child about what is it specifically that they're anxious about. So it's not just drama practice. It's about my friend seeing me there and I don't have the nicest shoes or something, or whatever it is for them. But it's about unpicking what it is about that. And in this example that I give in my book, the parent wrote to me the following week. I wasn't actually their therapist. They had just emailed me and they wrote to me the following week and said, I had a conversation with my child this week and I realized that I was not having the conversation, just like what you said there about confirmation bias, because I knew that talking about it would be so painful for me as a parent. So I avoided the conversation. This is what Brené Brown talks about. We avoid negative feelings because it in our children or in other people, because it makes us have to identify with that feeling within ourselves, which is too painful. And the parent said, I've had one or two little chats with my teenager since. We've opened up a channel of communication, which means that the teen can come back to the parent or the parent can come back to the teen. It doesn't have to be a big long chat. It's just letting them know that you're here. And the parent said that she just felt such a weight lifted off her shoulders that she had been able to talk to the child, and that really felt that it was worthwhile having broached the conversation. So that was amazing so that's why I start my book like that, because when I was younger, I was given placebo drugs to deal with my stomach aches. You know, I was given this white powder, and I wish, and I'm not blaming my parents, but I wish somebody had said, I wonder what you're anxious about. I wonder why your stomach is hurting. And maybe in those days, they didn't have the awareness that stomach aches could mean anxiety if there's nothing physically wrong with you. And I don't blame my parents. I don't. But I just needed someone to just unpackage that for me. And for me, you know, because the awareness of stomach aches could mean worries is huge for a child. Do you know what I mean? For them to even be aware of that, you know?
Mm. Absolutely. And the beauty of your experience is that you've kind of gifted this book to the world.
I hope so. Like, I've only had one friend read it so far.
Oh, really?
And just one friend just before publication read it. And she's a really good friend of mine. In fact, I start my book talking about her because I met her in the hospital right after we both had our babies, our second babies. And she basically read it and said that she felt like it was a gift. It was a gift of love to the world, which I, for me, that was such because I, there's so much of me in there. The way it's written is very gentle and compassionate. And I don't think as a parent, you could feel bad reading it and go, oh my God, I'm doing this wrong. If you even engage in any little bit of self-reflection from it, if you engage in some kindness for yourself, figure out what makes you feel nurtured as a parent, how you can kind of help to heal yourself. And if you need to go to counseling, fair enough, or you need to talk to people about that. But even if you just start with a little bit of self-work, you are going to help your anxious child. You will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's so brilliant. And I've no doubt that it is a little gift of love to the world, because again, I go back to that intervention, and you know, I know if I was a parent, I'd be picking it up immediately and going through it just to understand the tools and techniques I have at my disposal. So when this presents itself, I know what to do. And I think in this day and age with technology, with social media, with the growing pressure and the growing messaging that you have to achieve more and more and more, it's not just like the Leaving Cert like 20 years ago when I did it, before that kind of technology boom, it's the pressure seems way greater on kids today than it's ever been. So
I talk about the perfect storm in my book, which is like how there is this pressure, as you said, Nikki, to perform well, to be the best, to do all the time. I do think the COVID crisis that we're coming out of has really helped for people to figure out what parts of normal are worth rushing back to. Do you know what I mean? Why were we rushing around so much? Why did our kids need to be involved in a million different activities? They don't. They actually only need you and a few friends and a few little maybe things, interests that they like, but they don't need everything else. And I think for teenagers and that whole pressure of social media, and I think it's really hard for them. And like, I do talk about techniques and what to do. I suppose my book, I really wanted to be how to be with your child, how to be with yourself, how to be with your child. And then there's room for all of those techniques, and they're all in there. And I give really, really specific techniques about how to help a child overcome a phobia, how to play with your child, how to make a worry box, how to stillify a fear. I talk a lot about like little playful techniques, like if a child is afraid of a monster, how you might, rather than say there's no monster, how you might kind of get inside their world and say, I wonder, should we trap the monster in this little jar, and we can put it here and we can put something nice in the jar so the monster will go in there. So you just get inside your child's mind, because they're so imaginative at such a young age. So you kind of try to go into their world rather than deny their world. You go into their world. Like, I studied play therapy once I had done my clinical psychology training, and I love that world of imagination and play. And I just think I say to my daughter sometimes when she's afraid of a monster coming into her room, to kind of visualize the monster. And then we might put like a little tutu skirt and little like roller skates on the monster, and let's visualize that instead. So let's make this monster who's all scary, let's make the monster look really silly. Do you know what I mean? So there's lots of yeah, I talk about the pressures of the world and how we can kind of go back to basics a little bit more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think deploying play is hugely important, even for the adult, for the parent.
Yeah.
Like, it can be such a more fun experience, I would imagine. And I think as adults, when we become anxious, you know, one of the first things we forget and the last things we remember is that, you know, we're supposed to laugh. We're supposed to have fun. Mm. We're here for a short time. And all of a sudden, everything gets all serious and we completely forget that.
Play is the opposite of fear. Play loosens fear. Play gives you access to that nurturing part of your body. Like, I talk about three circles, which are from this theory called compassion-focused therapy, which is an amazing therapy that I use. And if you want to counterbalance that threat that you feel as a child, as an adult, it's all about bringing in that soothing circle, making that bigger. And I talk about it all in my book, and play would be one of those ways. Being playful, you don't have to play with toys. It could be humor. It could be watching a crap program on telly. It's about jumping up and down, doing something silly. Nurturing yourself, having a nice bath, talking, connecting with others. Connection with others is one of the biggest, most powerful ways of nurturing your soothing system, because we are all social beings from the very start. That relationship that the parent has with the child, and I talk about that quote, it's the first quote of my book, actually. Here's my book. And it kind of, this is like, for me, it's like, the parent-child connection is the most powerful mental health intervention known to mankind. And that's from Bessel van der Kolk, who's a trauma researcher.
Oh, I read his book. And basically, The Body Keeps the Score.
The Body Keeps the Score, amazing, exactly.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah, so book. So what did you like about it, Nikki?
For me, it's just like, sometimes the language I found a little bit difficult, a little bit challenging for myself. I'm not a clinical psychologist, obviously. But
do as well, don't worry.
For me, I just thought it was so fascinating how he broke down trauma and how he related, he almost reverse engineered what was going on. And I guess a lot of it was PTSD focused, but just explaining the consequences, explaining what was going on in the world. I thought it was just a really fascinating book. And I only heard about it not so long ago.
Yeah.
I saw it in Goodreads and it was number one on, I think, the New York Times or something like that. I'm not sure.
Wow.
Yeah, what about you?
See, for me, I'm hugely interested in trauma, like infant mental health, which is the mental health of a baby 0 to 3, which is when their brain really develops, and using attachment. That's all related to trauma research, which kind of talks about how, if certain things have happened to you as a younger child, how that can impact on your brain development, and that how that can then impact on your future relationships, on your future health outcomes. I mean, there is a study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study that found that if you'd experienced certain things as a child, you're more likely to have even physical difficulties as a grown-up. And that's not to say there's not hope ever. But I suppose my book kind of looks at, I follow the brain's way of processing kind of trauma. And that's where my steps come out of. So polyvagal theory, I don't know if you've heard about that, but it's all about kind of like this idea that unless your body feels safe, you cannot start to use your problem solving. You cannot rationalize out of an anxiety attack. Like, and that's what I mean. If the parent says there's nothing to worry about and the child is really, really freaking out, then, you know, that's not the way, that's kind of like, that's not that whole idea of you need to kind of regulate and relate with them first before they can move on to reasoning, you know? So I kind of use my love of kind of trauma research and all the learnings that I've had. But I try to really simplify it for parents in terms of what steps need to happen at what point, so that really you're going with the way the child's brain processes information. And trauma researchers would say there's no point in doing something like cognitive behavioral therapy with somebody who's deeply traumatized. Do you know what I mean? Or even mindfulness, yes, to an extent. Somebody can't necessarily feel comfortable inside their bodies. So it's all about helping you to feel safe first. It's about safety, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I guess a safety is that need that we all need to feel before we can say what
do
we
anything.
Can say or, yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Mali, what are some of the through your practice, I guess, since, you know, most of this book is birthed from your experience and obviously your research as well, but it's like from your own experience with helping people with children with anxiety, what would you say are some of the most common causes of childhood anxiety?
Well, as I said before, there is definitely like a 15% of people have an anxious temperament, which is like, you know, where you're born and you just have a temperament. We all have different temperaments and you just, it's just in you that you respond to the world in a more anxious way. That's just, and that's not to say that you're always going to have that, although temperament does seem to kind of last for our lives, but there's always an interaction between your temperament and your environment, which is where where you live and your parents' reactions and all that. I think the perfect storm that we talked about there, about like this focus on extrinsic versus intrinsic values nowadays, where it's all about the result of what you do rather than the process of what you do, how fast society is going, how quickly, you know, just, I don't know, just like this part, this, because we all have this brain that's wired for threat. We all have this fight or flight response. But the way our world has gone in the Western world has made that threat even bigger because anxiety is all about like overestimating threat and underestimating your ability to manage the threat. So if you have social media and you have this focus on being busy all the time and all these pressures, well, that's going to increase your sense of threat. And you are also, if you're not kind of engaged with like being, you know, in your body and just kind of, you know, responding to that threat constantly and in that threat mode yourself in your brain, you're going to underestimate your ability to cope. And that's what parents can do for children, is help them to increase their ability to cope. And that's about empowering them as well. It's not all about, it's okay, you can stay away from that if you're afraid of it. Avoiding situations makes your anxiety worse. It's about kind of helping them to face their fears, but in a really slow, gentle way. So it's not about you're going to that football practice, whether you like it or not. It's, you know, how can we make it easier for you to do that? So how can we make the steps? How can we take the gentle steps to empower you? It's about your belief in your child that they can do it. It's reassurance can also make anxiety worse by if you keep telling your child it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it doesn't work with them really. So I think there's many causes, back to your question of anxiety, but I do think it's something that's an epidemic nowadays, much more so than it was before. I'm sure you've noticed that yourself.
Yeah.
And it's something that we just have to address. We have to address it. You know, it's really important.
And early intervention, I suppose, and that positive affirmation delivered in a compassionate manner can like completely sway the child. So maybe when they are, you know, if it starts at 7 or 9, when they're 16 and they're going like it, they're at the height of their adolescence and they're succumbing to peer pressure and all that's going on in the world and the madness, that they would be more resilient then to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. Like, you know, another cause can also be like if there's certain life events that happen to you. Like I have kids coming into me, say, who nearly drowned in a pool, say, or they, you know, had a difficult, a grandparent died and they're really kind of, it's made them really anxious, or a teenager who has had issues with, you know, usually there's particular events that spark it off as well. So I think resilience, I talk about compassion-based resilience in my book, and it's about, you know, I suppose meeting yourself with kindness as a parent and using opportunities that are like mini threats in our lives, rather than see them as we need to keep away from all threats. Because life is full of threat. You know, a threat for your child can feel like going to school could feel like a threat for them. Like I'm thinking of the kids who have to go back to school after the COVID crisis. That is going to be quite threatening for a lot of kids because they're going to be taken away from their parents. And, you know, for other kids, they'll be delighted to go back to school and see their friends. And for other kids, it will feel really threatening. So it's kind of like figuring out how you can help them to see that as, you know, like as an opportunity rather than as a hindrance. The way parents see threat will impact on the way their children see threat. And that doesn't mean you say to your child, oh, don't worry about going back to school, it'll all be fine. But you kind of say, it will be difficult and I have enjoyed spending all this time with you, and let's take it day by day and see how things go, and kind of being gentle with them, but not letting them stay home from school either. It's not about being gentle, compassionate, and letting them have their way, because they'll never be able to face their fears if you don't help them along with that.
Mm. That's great. And I guess a nice segue into that is probably like, so I know, I saw you spoken this before, and I know like we know that you know, that fine balance that parents have to cut, that all important balance where you can be overprotective or you can be just a little bit too harsh. And both of them can send the child off down the path to anxiety or depression or whatever it might be. What are some of the characteristics that you would see in being overprotective as opposed to the one where you're not?
I think a lot, I mean, people are saying that, parents are a lot more overprotective nowadays than they were 15, 20 years ago. It probably is true. Do you know, there's a lot of, the media is telling us that there's dangerous people lurking everywhere, and it is probably making, they say, I've heard a psychiatrist once say that we overprotect our under 10-year-olds and we underprotect our over 10-year-olds. Because the second they turn into teenagers, we kind of just let them, if they tell us to F off, we just leave them alone, you know, whereas actually they really need us when they tell us to F off. There's a need underneath that F off. There really is, you know. What?
I said, don't read my blog.
Okay, well,
no,
there's always a need. There's always a need under your child's behavior. That's what this compassionate approach is. So overprotecting your child isn't going to be the solution. But it's about, you kind of try to figure out as a parent, what are the risks that I would like my child to be able to start to face? Like my husband and I had a big decision to make a few years ago about, will we let our children play out on the green with their friends? And, you know, what if a car, you know, it's pretty safe around where I live, but, you know, what if a car comes? What if a stranger comes? And rather than stop your children from, you know, kind of doing things like that, like engaging with the world, it's about equipping them with, if a car comes around the corner or if a stranger comes and talks to you, this is what I'd like you to do, rather than tell them they can't go out at all. Do you know what I mean? So it's about, how are they going to learn to be okay in this world if you overprotect them and wrap them in cotton wool? So one suggestion that I make to parents that's really, really kind of tangible, and I read this in a blog, I can't remember whose blog it was, but let your child do one thing today that you didn't let them do yesterday, and that'll actually help them. So whatever that is, it could be, you know, letting them, you know, butter their own toast and use a knife, or it could be letting them, you know, go outside by themselves for 5 minutes, or whatever it is, but try to face your own kind of fears, because that overprotection comes from somewhere in your life as a parent. Do you know what I mean? So it's about kind of addressing that yourself, you know?
Yeah. Brilliant. Just one other question kind of popped up there when you mentioned belief. It is of my belief that, if, you know, I always think, right, if I did have kids, one thing I would be would want to instill within them is a great belief in themselves. Not like a false belief or anything like that, but just a belief that they can go out and they can accomplish their goals. And yes, there will be challenges, but they've got to take them on. Just having that underlying gut belief that you can do it. Is that something you can kind of like program into a child?
All of that self-belief comes from every single interaction you have with them. And again, it's all about good enough. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's about delighting in your child. Like just before this interview today, one of my children just got a joke set, and she was playing practical jokes. You know, like she put a fake poo on my laptop, and the other one was learning the tin whistle and had learned a new note. And even though I was kind of putting on my makeup, getting ready for this interview, they needed me to delight in them, delighting in your children, like rather than, I don't have time for that. I know sometimes we don't have time and we have to come back to it if it's something that's going to take a while. But I made the conscious decision in that moment to say, okay, it's okay. Like I, even though I'm a bit nervous, it's, you know, and I'm putting on my makeup and I hope I have enough time and all of that, in that moment, they only needed like 5 or 10 seconds of my time. And I just stopped what I was doing and I listened and I said, oh my God, look at that on my laptop. Or, oh my God, you're such a practical joker. Or, oh, that note, how did you learn that note? That's so, I love it. How did you do that? And it's about showing them that they're worthwhile human beings, that they're really special, you know, in a very genuine, just like what you said there, Nikki. It's not about kind of, oh my God, you're the best in the whole world. And that's, you know, it's about genuine. It's about genuine affection towards them. It's about like, you know, it's all about the comforting when they're distressed and, but it's about having fun with them. Children love playing with you. They love quality time with you. Even if they're a teen, show interest in what they're doing, you know, kind of spend time with them. That is how they develop this kind of, and let them know that we all have this inner critical voice that says we're not good enough. All of us do. Like, you know, we're kind of grappling a little bit with, you know, one of my kids thinking, oh, you know, I wish, you know, about her body and kind of bodily kind of issues there. And it's like, it's about kind of being there, listening to what they have to say, reflecting it back to them, help them to feel felt. And if your emotions are attuned to as a child or as a teenager and you're delighted in, and not, it doesn't have to be perfect, and your parent repairs when there's a rupture, they say, I'm sorry, or you kind of talk about what has happened, and there's an open relationship about feelings, no matter how hard that is, I think that will help them to develop a sense of value, and also empowering them, letting them know you believe they can do it. I believe you can go to school today. I believe you're going to manage. And wow, look what you just did. That's brilliant. Even no matter how small, but make sure it's genuine, as you said, Nikki. It has to be genuinely coming. And I think a really important thing then for a parent is to be genuinely self-compassionate towards yourself. So to ask yourself, what aspects of yourself do you really like? What aspects do you want to nurture in yourself? If you are a happier parent within yourself, you will be able to, if you put love in, you can exude love out, which is what my book is kind of saying, really.
Yeah, beautiful. So where can people connect with you, and most importantly right now, where can they get the book?
Yeah, okay, well, this is my book. They can get the book on any Eason's, Amazon, Book Depository, like Dubray, whatever, wherever they get their books, it'll be there. It's by HarperCollins Ireland, so you can just like totally just get it wherever. And I have a website, drmallycoyne.ie, where I have loads in my book about, I have excerpts from my book in there and videos about it. But then I also have a lot of Facebook Live videos that I'm actually turning into a podcast, which I've been doing during the COVID crisis, that actually talk about a lot of these concepts. So, and I'm on all social media kind of channels as well.
Okay, brilliant. What's your handle on the social media? It's Dr. Mally Coyne.
Yeah, on Twitter, it's like Mally Coyne. I have a Facebook page called Dr. Mally Coyne. And if people want to email me, drmallycoyne@gmail.com, they can do that as well, because I do a parent Q&A in my Facebook Live podcast as well, where parents ask me questions and I answer them specifically. It's something that I started during the COVID crisis. And I think, and I also like will reply to parents by email, but obviously I can't get into a therapeutic relationship with them. It's kind of like a brief kind of, this is a little bit of help. This is a book you could read about that. It's not all about just me. There's lots of amazing professionals out there and people working out there that I bring to the world as well, that it's not just about my book. Do you know that kind of way?
My book.
Yeah, my book. But my get book. My book.
brilliant.
I need to get used to this self-promotion stuff, because I'm just like, I tell my husband, do not put a buy now button on my Facebook page or on my website. I just can't do that. It's just like so not me. I just can't do it. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know?
Do it, do it. Get a nice banner, get my book.
We can clip
this out and share it with you. And for the international audience, because like, is it available, say, in the States or Australia? Like, if you buy it on Amazon, you get it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon.co.uk, Amazon.au, isn't that Australia? Oh. Amazon.com. It's available. It's not available, like, if you go to a bookstore in America. But I'm not sure. I actually don't know about Australia, but you can get it online, no bother, on Amazon, on wherever you are in the world.
Okay, cool. And hopefully in the near future, when it takes off, it will be available.
I really hope so. Stores. Yeah.
And should I have something else to say?
You cursed.
I know. That's okay. Sorry.
I know. I'd love to curse. No, but I just start.
We'll put that in a clip now.
Good.
I had one more. Oh, sorry. Yes. No, this isn't what I got. What I wanted to say. It's lost for me. Sorry about that. But is there going to be an audiobook?
There is an audiobook
already.
I'm so pissed off about that. I'll tell you why I've cursed again. I was meant to record my own audiobook in Dublin back in March during the COVID crisis. And I was going to do it in Larry Gogan's son's studio. No. And I was really looking forward to it. It was like 4 days of recording my book and all of that. And I was just hugely looking forward to it. But the COVID crisis hit and they told me I couldn't do it. So they actually got another woman to do it who's amazing. Her name, I think, is Michelle McMahon. She's recorded Normal People and loads of other amazing books she's recorded. So she's done a fabulous job. I've been sent the audio clips. You can get it on Amazon Audible, I think.
Yeah.
You can just Google it and it's there. It's there in audio, available the 23rd of July as well.
We'll get the links. We'll get the links.
Yeah.
I'm sure any parent watching this is going to pick it up today, because it's just too important, right? If you can avoid these problems later on in life, everybody's life is better. And as your friend said, it is a little gift of love to the world. So again, hats off to you. Just before I let you go, what would be kind of your top three? I usually ask this is a different conversation.
No pressure.
So what would your top three tips for parents struggling with a child struggling with anxiety today?
Oh, God. Number one, be kind to yourself. You know, kind of self-reflection and nurture yourself in that. You know, it's okay. Nobody knows how to do this parenting job and it's hard for everybody. And be gentle with yourself. So that's the love in. And then secondly, kind of really realize how important your role is as a parent, that you do have like skills, you have intuition, you have gut instinct that will be able to help your child. You actually have like the magical powers to be able to help your child. And it's not always about doing. Sometimes it's just about being with your child in their difficult feelings. And I suppose thirdly, I would say that I hope that my book will help anxious children out there. And that's the last thing I say in my book, and this is the last paragraph, the last little bit is: to every child and grown-up child who feels anxious out there, and I'm saying grown-up children as well, This one's for you. I've been there, it's really hard, and I'm holding your hand. I hope this book gives you a voice and does you justice. And that is the number one thing for me, is to do justice to all the little children out there and all the teenagers and all the grown-up children out there who maybe their parents didn't quite know how to react to them. And I really, really hope that this kind of starts something stirring in the parent that will help them to, you know, to respond to their child in a way that's really compassionate to themselves and to their child.
Beautiful. I can't thank you enough. And just for writing this book, I think it is like such a blessing to the world. And I'm not bullshitting. I hope it sells 10 million copies and 10 million more, because I think like it can actually like profoundly, a book like this, even though I haven't read it, but just from speaking with you, from researching, from reading up about it, I think it can profoundly impact not only millions of children's lives, but the adults they grow up to and how they walk through life without having to deal with this being suppressed for so many years and having to spend so many more years trying to unravel and figure it out. So good for you. It is not an easy subject to tackle, and you should be really proud and pop that champagne.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on, Nikki. I'd love to hear more about your story, and I think what you're doing is amazing. I really do. I think I think you're doing it from a really kind place in your heart. It's probably very healing for you what you're doing. You want to kind of contribute to people being healed in a way, and I think you're doing it from a really beautiful place. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.